Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, Something from the Cellar. Another midweek episode that sees us revisit some of the brilliant guests we've had on the show over the last 4 years. Now, usually every Tuesday, I cut together three brilliant guests from the White Wine Question Time archive, the wine cellar, if you like. But this week, we're handing the whole thing over to one woman who, quite frankly, is the woman of the hour. She's a friend of mine. For years, she dazzled in the West End. Nobody ever really took seriously the level of talent that oozed out of everything she did. She was the ultimate triple threat. And then everything changed via Ted Lasso. Yes, it's Hannah Waddingham. I'm about to play you an episode that we recorded about 18 months ago. It was a Monday night. We had a few technical issues. Hannah was supposed to be dialing in from her house. I was going to be dialing in from mine. It wasn't to be. Technology was working against us. So, legend that she is, she dialed an Uber, jumped in the car, and came round. By the time she got to mine, I had a curry on the go, the wine was chilled, and we popped our corks and talked and talked and talked. I cannot tell you how lovely it is to see Hannah finally being recognised, celebrated, and adored by audiences around the world. So sit back and listen in as we unpack the brilliant Hannah Waddingham story. Hannah Waddingham, thank you so much.
It's completely my pleasure. Do you know what? That literally felt like an obituary. So thank you for saying that. Now I know what you'll say at my funeral.
Yeah. I mean, when you hear it back, it's quite a life, right?
I know. It makes me feel like I've actually done a bit that's been quite worthwhile. So that's good.
A bit? Hello?
Yeah.
More than a bit?
No, but you know, in your 20s and your 30s, you really, really, you judge yourself terribly. And you always worry that you're not doing enough or you're not doing things right. Or at least I have and do. And then when you hear it all together, you think, oh, that's what I've done with the last 20 years of my life.
I mean, it's quite something from, you know, the toast of the West End to the toast of the Hollywood Awards circuit.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. I find that really, really, really crazy. Yeah, it feels like that kind of thing happens to other people, not me.
Well, can you remember? So there was the first time we met, we waitressed together, didn't we?
Yes.
At the Ivy restaurant, and it was a snowy night in London. Do you remember?
We were both like, oh my God, you look like me and I look like you. What's going on?
Yeah. So we'd never met before. We got put on this rota, waitressing at a charity event. And I'd driven through blizzards to get there, walked through the door, and there you were. And I went, "Whoa, you look like me." And you went, "Whoa, you look like me."
I mean, we actually did do that. We were like, we look like we've got slightly different dads.
Yeah.
But other than that, I know.
We took pictures of ourselves together and everything.
We did.
Like, look at us. Look, we've got evidence. Showed all my friends. I was, look, here she is. It's my sister from another mister.
It's so true.
And fast forward to a couple of years later, I think it's 3 years later, you are sat in a hotel room in London with Juno Temple picking up the Critics' Choice Award and like looking like somebody had just slapped you in the face with a wonderful wet kipper.
I mean, met just absolutely crazy because not 30 seconds before, because of course, bear in mind, in COVID times, we're all on laptops and all the rest of it. And there had been a glam team that had come to the Rosewood Hotel. And I had literally just apologized to the entire glam team, just said, look, I feel so ridiculous. You've made me look all lovely and glamorous and taken all your time. And in 30 seconds time, we're literally going to put this laptop down, lid down and go home. And then they went, and the Critics' Choice is Hannah Waddingham. And I honestly thought I'd disappeared into my own head. And I literally thought, speak, just in case it's true. So if somebody had said to me that I just went, had a fleda bena mena snena mena mena for 40 seconds, I would have believed them until I watched it back and thought, oh, that's total accidental eloquence.
Well, you pulled it off, but I saw Juno literally scream and have to leave the room.
Yeah, she ran into the bathroom and was rugby tackled by someone else to shut up. And then once it had finished, she landed on me. Do you remember those little kind of furry koala clips that kids used to put on? She landed on me like a little koala clip.
Yeah, they were called cheekaboos.
There we go, one of those. She landed on me like a cheekaboo and didn't get off for about half an hour. Didn't stop squealing.
I mean, it is just so glorious. You're about to head into the Emmys, and Ted Lasso has 20 nominations this year.
Yeah.
Just so you know, the most nominated show in history with 32 nominations, you were in Game of Thrones.
Oh, was it? Oh, wow, that's camp,
yeah.
Isn't
it? Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean,
and this, do you know what the beauty about this is? We are the most nominated, Emmy nominated for a freshman comedy in Emmy history. And the thing that's lovely is we've all been nominated individually, which is really quite in keeping with the show because we are, including Jason, it's an absolute team effort. And so that would have been a bit awks if somebody had been left out.
I mean, it's what a spread. And like you say, it's a freshman show. So that means you've been nominated for this many awards on your first season out.
First outing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's just crazy. And something that I didn't remotely see coming at all. I thought, oh, we're going out for a lovely jolly in LA. We've got the season premiere. And Jason and the show will undoubtedly be nominated, and so they should be. And so that day, I was just like, my manager went, we'll meet up, we'll have breakfast. And I went, no, we won't. I'm just going to chill my beans and get ready to go, hey, that the show's been nominated. I mean, not for a second thinking that I would be nominated or that all of us would be.
It's brilliant.
Just,
I mean,
crazy.
What a moment. And I know that you had, before you got this role in Ted Lasso, you were struggling with the same kind of juggling act that most single parents do, which is you want to work. Of course you want to work. You've got to work, but you can't be overseas for long periods because you've got a daughter back here in London. So that was tricky for you, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I had actually said to them, I had been shooting Krypton for Warner Brothers out in Belfast, just Belfast. But my daughter became ill suddenly and randomly. And we still don't quite know why. She had a thing called HSP, which for anyone who knows what that's like, it's really horrific. And when she got ill suddenly, I couldn't get home. Even though I was only in Belfast, the last flight had left that night. Even though I'd spoken to her half an hour earlier, she was absolutely fine. She then woke up, suddenly had all these kind of giraffe splats of brown on her legs, which turned out to be the capillaries bursting on her little leggies. And was vomiting and all the rest of it. And I couldn't get back to her. I tried to charter a helicopter. The producers tried to get me on some boat over there. And I couldn't get back. And I finally got back the following morning. I got the first flight out. And of course, I arrive at the hospital and she's going, "Mummy, look, the bed goes up and down and tips forward and the legs go up." And she was fine-ish. But it kind of went on for a few months. But I said to my management, both here and in LA, on a conference call that day, I said, "This is not happening again." Whether that means that I have to, you know, dumb down what I'm doing, or be less committed to work that might have the possibility of taking me abroad or whatever, I'm perfectly happy to be here, to be doing bits and pieces. I'll do concerts, I'll do voiceovers, I'll do, you know, and that would be brilliant for any actor. But where they were wanting to take me and where they felt I was moving into, the phone went silent. And I said, "Look, I get it. I don't want it this way either. But I am first and foremost a mum, and more importantly, a single mum. And I'm happy with that decision." And literally, like a month later, when my girl was getting better, I stood outside in my garden and I looked up at the sky. This is no word of a lie. And I just went, "Do you know what? Thank you so much for pulling her through this. And I don't take it lightly that you've made my daughter better. I know it's going to be dormant in her system they've said till she's about 10. But I'm really grateful. Is there any way you could give me something that will really just fill our lives and let me do things with her? And as a single mum, will keep us financially. And also, can I be so cheeky as to say, could it be something that shows everything that I can do and things that I don't feel like I've been able to do yet? And is there any way it could just be here and maybe around the corner?" And I'm not joking. Within 2 months, the audition came in for Ted Lasso that shoots 40 minutes away from my house.
I mean, honestly.
Mental. Completely mental. Ask the universe, people. It works.
Wait, honestly, when you told me that, it was like, from one single mother to another, I was like, "Oh my God, that's the greatest gift." Yeah. You can be both. You don't have to sacrifice one for the other.
No. And I've only done it once before, and that was when I was having a hard time with a bloke, and I did the same thing. I was like, "I think it's probably best if that person jogs on," and it worked then as well.
Did it?
Yeah, I think you have to really, really mean it and let it in, or let whatever that message is out. And I don't know. I just think it's too much of a coincidence.
Manifestation, though, isn't it? You keep saying it, you put it out there. If you will it and want it and are open to it, then, you know, somebody crosses your path. Kind of brings me to my first question, because I was so thrilled when I read that Jason had gone out on a limb to get you your role in Ted Lasso. I know that they'd seen other people for the role and he liked you and had to kind of convince Apple, you know, who are, let's call it for what it is, a big Hollywood studio now, and convince them that you don't need a marquee name for this role. You need the right person for this role, and I've got her. And he really went out on a limb for you.
He wasn't having any of it. He was, he just said that when he and I met, I was called out to LA for a chemistry read with him. And I just thought, "Oh, well, this will go to, as I call, one of the famouses." And it was really good. Them. Yeah, the famouses.
The famous.
Oh, it's the famouses. Famouses.
But
you know me. That's never going to wash with me. For me, I'm a jobbing actress to a greater or lesser extent, and that's it. And that's fine for me. Because I feel like if I let anything else, if I let any la-di-da stuff in, I feel like the quality of my work will suffer. And that's the honest truth. So no, that not for me. Not for me. The whole famousy thing, celebrity thing, is what I say to that. But I went over for this chemistry read with him, and we just immediately got on like a house on fire, on a very low key, you know, hello, what are we doing? Oh, we're doing this. Have they told you much about it? And I was like, no. And he went, "What, we've just sent you the scenes?" I was like, "Yeah, just the Rebecca scenes." They had no clue about the Rupert character, no clue about what she and Ted would mean to each other, no clue about Keely. And I think just on a very basic level, Jason and I just got on. And he obviously liked what I did. And then when I came home, I didn't hear anything for ages. And I just thought, okay, well, that was that. I know I couldn't have done any better with the material. I felt the character really ripple through my bloodstream. And I thought, okay, well, they've gone for a famouser, and that's fine. But apparently, no, he had just gone. I knew it was her when she walked in the room. And why do you need to go for someone else when she is how I imagined her sounding, how I imagined her looking?
Wow.
Done. And he didn't care that I was taller than him in heels either, if you notice.
Do you know what? I hadn't noticed.
He doesn't care. And when the costume designer said, look, Hannah would like to, because a part of it for me was, even though I didn't want her to apologize for her height, I wanted her to also use it as a tool to pretend that she's stronger than she is.
Yeah, which she does. Yeah. So she makes herself big, doesn't she?
Yeah, she makes herself big. So I want her in a 4-inch heel, even though I'm 5'11 in my stocking feet. So that makes me 6'2", nearly 6'3", which is taller than him. And he was like, let her wear what she wants. I love high heels. So that was that. He was totally, totally cool with it and has continued like that. And if you look at the episodes, he shines the light all over the place away from himself.
He really does, actually.
He really does.
And he gives us a really lovable leading man. There's something almost Tom Hanks about the way he delivers that role, that ability to be just so endearing and charming. But he gives that to all of his characters. It's a really clever piece, Ted Lasso, and I understand entirely why millions of people around the world are gobbling it up. And I wondered, before Jason crossed your path, has anybody else featured in your life that's enabled you to go on to do something bigger, better, greater, to be more? Somebody that's also put themselves out for you?
Yeah, in fact... David Benioff and Dan Weiss, the two exec producers and creators of Game of Thrones, did just that, both for Thrones and for Ted Lasso. And not really? Many people know that. Yeah, that in a moment of wanting to push the ball over the line, David Benioff and Dan Weiss kind of butted in and went, why are you even questioning it?
Wow.
Give it to her. Yeah.
So when you went up for Thrones, it was already established. It wasn't, joining from scratch. It was huge.
It was so established. And because I'd been doing theatre, I was aware of it, of course, but I had been so busy doing theatre and 8 shows a week and just, it's hardcore doing theatre. It really is. It's a vocation very much. And so I knew of it, of course. So it was season 5 that I went into. And when I went for the audition for it, I don't know whether I've ever told you this, I was nearly 8.5 months pregnant, pregnant from the cheekbones out. You know when your face joins in the last month?
Face and ankles.
I was like that. My ankle, I literally looked like a case study. My feet were like a case study. And I walked in and honestly, I genuinely thought I was in the wrong place because all the women were 70 odd and about 5'2". And about 20 foot wide. And I was like, right, I appreciate that I'm pregnant at the moment, but I'm definitely in the wrong casting. And apparently I'd been put in as the wild card.
Really?
Yeah. So when I went in for the meeting and met David and Dan, I was a bit like, hello, I don't really know why I'm here and I know nothing about Game of Thrones.
Because I'm really pregnant.
And I'm so pregnant, I might have an accident right here. And I just went, I don't, they said, so you know about Cersei? And I went, I really don't. And they said, oh, well, she's the queen and blah, blah, blah. And this woman is the first woman who's ever kind of come up against her and not been affected by Cersei. And I was like, okay. So I did the casting and it was really lovely because Nina Gold, the casting director, I just kind of went, oh, anyway, thanks for seeing me. And I accidentally smacked the ladle, a wooden ladle on the casting assistant's leg. And in the middle of the take, when I meant to be really nasty, I went, oh my God, darling, are you all right? And when I came back from my recall, David Benioff and Dan Weiss just went, that made us laugh so much. It was like you were this menacing person who's going to kill someone and then you turned into Joanna Lumley suddenly. I was like, well, yes, that's me, acty person. And then the real me being quite concerned that I'd literally just smacked the shit out of this woman's ankle on her shin.
But that moment, really, you think about it, it's so pivotal because that ignited something in them for you, which then led not only to Thrones, but to Ted Lasso. I mean,
yeah. And I literally, I'm not joking, I went along to that casting for Game of Thrones as a kind of, hello, I didn't want to miss the casting. I clearly can't help you out at the moment because I'm about to give birth, but I just wanted to come and say hello for next time, which I think a lot of actors would do. You know, I know I'm not particularly right for this, but I'm coming to say hello for next time. And Nina Gold came chasing out after me and went, this shoot's in 9 weeks. Is this something you'd consider? And I was literally like, yes.
little did you know.
I mean, and I just went, I literally went home to one of my best mates and went, right, if this happens, you're coming with me to Dubrovnik. And she went, when? And I went, imminently.
9 weeks.
Yeah. And so my daughter was she was 8 weeks old when I went out there with my friend and had the really embarrassing moment of being in my wimple and habit, nun's habit. And I could hear my daughter crying, like off stage, as it were, behind a building for that first part of the walk of shame. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to start lactating through my...
Because the moment you hear them cry, your boobs speak back. Oh my God.
I thought they're literally, it's going to be like, da, 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 da. Oh God. But thankfully not. But when I look at that first part of the walk of shame, and Lena, who's been a great pal ever since, Lena Headey, was just like, baby, you all right? And I went, not really, I'm really suffering like postpartum.
I mean, that's hard going back.
It was.
I went back and did one sort of 5-day show when my son was 10 weeks old. And I remember putting myself in two pairs of Spanx to do it whilst breastfeeding. And I literally just, what was good about it was it taught me that I'm not ready to go yet.
Yeah.
But you just, once you've signed up, you feel you've got to get on with it.
Yeah. And I thought also, because I knew that I had wanted to step away a bit from theatre, because I didn't want to be out 6 nights a week, 8 shows a week, away from the little person that I had waited so long for when I was told I couldn't have children previously. So
were you really?
Yeah, just kind of by accident, really. I did my medical for Benidorm and I got a letter back saying, you know, blood type this, blah, blah, that, blah, 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 fertility low, da, da, da. And I was like, whoa, 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 what? It was just on a form.
Wow.
And yeah, I was just told that it would be unlikely for me to conceive. So then when I did, you know, she's a precious little thing that was meant to come to me. And I thought, okay, I need to be with this little precious love that's been given to me. And so I'm really mindful always and so appreciative that the door for screen work swung open to me when it did, you know, just before I was doing Kiss Me Kate at the Old Vic. And then I had Darren Lytton ask me to come on board for Benidorm. And that kind of, I mean, I have to kind of credit Darren as well for letting me in, certainly into comedy. And it was after that, during Benidorm, I got that medical thing through. And during Benidorm, I was on a mission to find out a way, and I went down the homeopathic route, and that seemed to work.
Wow, really?
Mm.
I mean, that must be, when you read something like that and you're not expecting it, it must have knocked you off your feet.
Oh, I was absolute tunnel vision, couldn't think of anything else. And her dad, actually, at the time, was just like, look, if this isn't for us, it isn't for us. And I was like, no, 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 no. There's nothing wrong with me. There's no. And he went, well, you know, it doesn't always work like that. And I was like, I know it doesn't work like that. I'm just saying I'm not ready to, you know, give up on this. I need to see what's happening here. And gosh, the blessing that I was one of those women that it did turn around for. I know 2 or 3 of my girlfriends haven't had that privilege. So I'm acutely aware of the privilege that it is. And that at that point, I just thought, right, if I can avoid it, if I can avoid being away from her, you know, one of my favorite things in the whole world is bath, books and bed. So that's what I did. And I feel like I've been extended that luxury And so, you know, all the lovely awards and being in great shows is totally the icing on the cake for me, and something I don't take for granted either. I don't think I would ever get above myself, because like you said at the beginning, I've struggled as much as the next person in different ways.
Well, you were 18 years in the West End. That is, I mean, Jesus.
Yeah,
18 years. That's some strikes you burn.
I was only 12 when I started, by the way.
So, I mean, those guys ended up changing everything really for you, didn't they?
Yeah,
and
they did.
Darren as well. It's yeah, people taking a chance, isn't it? It's people going out of the way and going, talent prevails. And I think this person has the talent that I need for this role. And I don't care about profile or
yes,
cred.
Because actually, Darren, I know, had the same trouble. That ITV were going, well, she's not famous. And he was like, no, but I want her. And you just think, well, hold on a minute. And I don't find the same problem in America at all. It's like there's been a reluctance to kind of let me in. And you're saying, okay. Well, for a long while, I was thinking, okay, they can't see past the fact that I've done theatre. Whereas in America, if you do theatre and certainly musical theatre, they think, my God, they're a triple threat. Let's get them into anything.
Whereas it's celebrated.
Here, it's not the same now, I don't think. I think casting directors here are now far more open to musical theatre people stepping in front of the camera. But certainly back then, we're talking 8-10 years ago, it was absolutely impenetrable.
Yeah. And yet in you came. And now look.
Battering down the door.
I refuse to leave until you see me.
I'm not going quietly.
But, you know, and then Lasso comes along, and not only is it a great show, it's on your doorstep. I mean, you can't dream this stuff, can you?
No.
Where's it shot?
It's shot in Richmond. And funnily enough, when I went over for the chemistry read with Jason, I didn't actually know that. I went along, I had said to my management, right, I'll go along, but they didn't know it either. So they were like, well, look, okay, go along. It's great to meet Jason. And Bill Rubel was there as well, one of our writers. And I just thought, okay. So I went along for 4 days and had a lovely time and had tapas with mates from 12 Monkeys that I did previously. And I was just like, okay. And I think because I took it with a pinch of salt, and fully didn't think I was going to get it, I was probably more relaxed. And then in the conversation, I said to Jason, I was like, okay, so one thing I do know is that she's the owner of a football team, but, and I know that it's, you know, based somewhere like in the UK, but where are you shooting it? And he went, Richmond. And I went, what do you mean? Where? And he went, in Surrey. And I went, Richmond in Surrey? What? Richmond, that's 40 minutes from my house, 30 minutes, if that. And he went, yeah, well, if it's set in Richmond, then I suppose we should be there. I mean, he's such a cool cat. And I was like, right. Oh, God.
I really want this now.
Literally at the end of my meeting with him, which I think had probably gone quite well because we were in the room together for 2 hours.
2 hours is good.
Yeah. And then at the end of it, Bill Rubel, this chap I was just talking about, one of our main writers, said in the darkness, like a voice in the dark, went, oh, by the way, I love you in your musicals. I've seen you in this. I've seen you in that. And I went, oh, you know, like blinking through the light. I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And as we left the room, I said to our casting director, Kimberly, I went, but Rebecca doesn't sing, does she? And Jason was walking in front of us and under his breath he went, she does now. And I was like
and she does.
What?
I mean, she gets the great Christmas tune, but also she gets the karaoke where she sings Let It Go, and that is not an easy song. And you absolutely, I mean, your family are incredibly musical, but wow, you've got some lungs on you. It's so exciting when you sing.
Yeah, but I didn't want to sing that. Did I tell you that? I didn't want to say Let It Go. Well, I saw it said, and Rebecca sings Let It Go in the karaoke. I thought that was just like, and Rebecca sings something. And then when I went, so what am I going to be singing? And Jason went, Let It Go from Frozen. And I went, are you joking? And he went, no, why not? It's like the perfect song, the perfect moment. And I went, That I've as a professional singer, I've avoided that song ever since it came out about 5 years ago. If there's been a concert where they've asked me to sing it, I've gone, no, I'm not doing that one. Because, you know, it's been sung so brilliantly and sung to death by everyone else since. And I thought, oh, come on, you're really putting my back against the wall with this one. And he was so cool. He went, okay, go off into your dressing room. And if you can find me a better song that's the perfect Venn diagram moment for your character, for my character, for Nora, your goddaughter, being reintroduced, you know, the song that you and she would have sung together when she was younger, all of that. I was like, fine, I will then. I will. I'm going to find something better. And I went into my trailer and I was like, song. And I was thinking, you know, Reflections from I think it's Mulan or whatever. And I was just like, oh God, he found the perfect song. Yeah. And then I sang it for about 10 hours in that karaoke place. And I've cursed him ever since.
10 hours.
Honestly. Oh,
but it's good. You showed yourself in the finest of lights.
At the end, absolutely. I was like, let it go!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This kind of takes me really nicely to my next question, because I know that at times you have truly suffered for your art. In Thrones, tell me if this is the details right on this. Did you not spend 10 hours strapped to a table while Lena Headey waterboarded you with wine?
Yeah, wineboarded me.
Yeah, wineboarded.
The other day I was at David Benioff's birthday and we were all discussing that, because recently it's been... spoken about in the press that I said that I would, you know, I was waterboarded for 10 hours and why it was the worst day of my life other than childbirth. What I actually said was, it was next to childbirth, but I would 100% do it again. Because you know that they're not actually going to kill you, and it makes amazing television. Was it massively uncomfortable and easily the worst day other than my grueling childbirth? Yes. And I don't care who knows it. And they all know it.
But also, in Lasso, I mean, you've eaten more dry biscuits than a drunk student doing the cracker challenge.
Man, they are dry. Oh, my God. They are, like, literally, you know, like, making your gums become your top lip. Really. Although they are better this season, because I've complained so globally about them that the first bite I took, I was like, oh, that is distinctly more buttery and sugary. I've just complained so much. But it's my fault in the first place, because I decided she should be an emotional eater. Once she found them, they're like her, you know.
Kryptonite. No, not her kryptonite.
Not kryptonite. What's the opposite?
The opposite, you know, yeah.
That's her thing. So, you know, the props department were like, oh my God, we didn't know you were going to go at them like some depraved truffle hound.
Which you did. So there's some examples of how you've suffered for your art, but I'm sure with 18 years in the West End and all of the amazing work you've done on screen, there's got to be other examples where you've really, really taken one for the team in the name of you know, your profession and your art.
How about having a live mouse in my costume on stage?
Why?
Because what's the name of the theatre where I did Spamalot? Oh, my God. See, what were we talking about earlier? Perimenopausal brain fog.
Perimenopausal moments. Like, oh, I've got a brilliant story for you and it's just going to fall out of my head onto the floor. There it goes. Bye. Off I go. Yeah. Welcome to my life.
Cambridge Theatre, is it? No, it's not the Cambridge. Oh, which one is it?
One of London's finest theatres.
Where I was for a year and a half.
Can't remember.
Oh my God, everyone's just going to be like, seriously, these two dippy blondes. Anyway, there, I used to have to go substage. I used to be taken down, you know, in the trapdoor, as you do, and then I would have to fling things off inside the trap.
To change. And
then, yeah, because I had a 47-second change before I had to go back up
47.
Through the floor again. Holding the grail, yeah.
You're a rock star.
So it became like a thing of me helping the costume department. So I'd try and be flinging things off. And my dress for the next section would always be kind of wrinkled up and left in a pool on the floor for me to step into. And then I'd get my arms into it while I was putting on a headdress, you know. And the mouse must have got in between the lining and the outer part of the dress. So it got up to here, up to like armpit level. So when I went back up, we hadn't noticed because we're all so quick. When I went back up through the floor and I'm holding the grail and then there's all the female ensemble going, ah, and I'm just going up and I can feel this. And in my head, I thought, oh, my shoulder must be spasming because I'd got quite bad muscle strain always from holding the grail above my head. And so my brain told me it was a muscle spasm. And I moved across to sing in lovely Tim Curry's face and it stopped. And I thought, oh, it's just my muscle spasm stopped. And then cut to 2 days later, there was this acrid stench in my dressing room. And I was thinking, there must be like dead mice in it. And my brain suddenly went, it's worse near me. I took off my costume, flicked it, and a dead mouse flung itself across the room, smacked against the wall and landed on the floor. So I'd had it in my costume with it alive once and had either deafened it or squashed it or both. And had it dead in my costume for 2 days. And that was also a matinee day. So it's three performances.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Rank.
You might have killed it by song.
Deafening it. Yeah, yeah.
That's truly gross.
Isn't that grim?
That's disgusting.
I mean, seriously revolting. Really, really revolting. And the next day I was like, can I just check that my costume has been dry cleaned? And the company manager went, oh, I'd have thought so. And I went, no. I want to see a dry cleaning little label with the safety pin attached. Do you know that bit of paper? I want to see proof.
I'm not stepping back into that.
Oh, it was absolutely rancid. And then people have kind of recounted that to me and gone, oh my God, did you hear about that girl who had a... I was like, yes, that was me.
Oh, I love it when something becomes like mythical legend.
Yes, urban myth, yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. You couldn't make that up. And then, of course, all our gorgeous gay boys in the show were like, hickory dickory dock, a mouse ran up your frock.
But that's not all they sang. Now, my final question to you is all about the power of one word, because tell me again if I've got this wrong, but was your audition for Game of Thrones, did it involve you just saying the word shame?
No.
That's no. There you go.
It was the scene. It was just one scene. It was the scene with the ladle when I'm giving her water and then she goes, you know, I can make you a wealthy woman. And I smack her around the face with a ladle.
That one.
And I go, confess. It was confess is what I was saying.
Confess.
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 And when we actually shot it, I actually added, bear in mind, we actually dropped out the real ladle and put a rubber one in. So it was never going to hurt her, but, you know, I added an extra slap around her face. And, oh, my God, Lena, it was like her jaw was in a different, was like, looking at me like, I'll so get you when they shout cut. And I got into it too much in the audition and flung this wooden spoon at the shin of the casting director. And that's when I went, oh, my God, darling, I'm so sorry. You were right. Yeah, it was that scene. Nothing to do with the shame. And the only time I kind of went through that with brilliant David Nutter, the director of The Walk of Atonement, he just went, I know that this is ridiculous, but I just, and I know you're a singer, but I just wanted to check with you. We need to find a very definite tone and rhythm for you to say that she will have used all her life to make what she thinks are vile, revolting people atone for their behavior. So it's a very well-versed, monotonous, and terrifying tone. It's almost like, you know, the death toll ringing through there. And people will have heard that same repetitive, and they'll have known that Septa Unella is the one that does it. And the fear in others comes from hearing that tone walking through the streets. And I went, what, like this? And I did it. And he went, yeah, that was the shortest meeting ever. What's that?
And that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. So, because I thought that you'd nailed it on one word, obviously not. But I just wanted to know, is there any time in your life when just the use of a single word has been incredibly meaningful or powerful?
Ooh, what, that I've had to say in an audition?
Or that's been said to you, is it a yes? Is it a no? Is it a... I mean, wherever you stand in life, it could be at work, it could be in your personal life, but where the use of one word has gone on to kind of change things up incredibly.
Actually, while you're saying that, if you think about it, actually earlier than that, my English teacher, who also used to kind of do drama, I went to a very academic school, so it wasn't necessarily like drama teacher, but he would kind of double up as our drama teacher, the English teacher, Mr. Woolley, his name was. And he knew that I'd got into drama school. And actually, funny enough, that makes me a bit shivery, you saying that. He said to me, I see great things for you, Hannah, and I want to give you one word, and that is humility.
Oh.
And I only just remember that.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
And hasn't that served you well?
And I remember thinking, okay. What does that mean?
I just spell
17.
It.
I was literally, I think, 17, just about to turn 18. And I was very taken with him. I found him fascinating. And he was fascinating in a hugely talented, quiet way. And I'll never forget it. We were like literally in a corridor and he had books in his arms like a proper kind of professor. And he went, I've just heard you've got into drama school, which I know the headmistress is not pleased about because she wanted me to go and read at university. And he went, good for you. But always remember the key to that existence is humility.
Oh, how lovely is that?
Yeah.
Isn't it great when you revisit those moments? You go...
Yeah, thank you for jogging my memory about that one. Yeah.
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 And it has seen you well, humility.
I think so. I'm always mindful of that. And like you say, and like we were talking about earlier, you know, the lovely things that are happening, nominations and the show doing brilliantly and more people stopping me in the street, does it make me a different person? No, because I walk through my front door and I'm still a single mom and looking after my girl, and it could absolutely all end tomorrow. And I'm mindful of that always.
Yeah, but when you've been doing it this long and it's not come overnight, you learn to value it. You enjoy it.
Yeah, you do.
I hope you're able to enjoy some of these moments, because I think the later in life success visits us, the more we're able to kind of nourish our souls with it and not let it destroy us.
Yeah, I think so. And because I didn't come from money, it's never been the be-all and end-all. And when some comes, I don't take it lightly and I try and put it to good use. And so, yeah, I mean, like you say, finding more notoriety later on in your career, I think is perhaps no bad thing. And I certainly don't think I would have been able to play this part of Rebecca Welton when I was younger and hadn't been through heartache and all of that kind of thing. So I do think things plop into your life when they're meant to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just sometimes I wish we could go back and go, don't worry, there's something really great just up ahead.
Absolutely. Hold tight. And just enjoy the moment that you're in and you'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah. If you could just have that, it would make the world a difference, wouldn't it?
Oh, I would have gone out and got hammered more.
Touché.
Yeah, hey. Sort of constantly thinking, look after the boys.
Got to go to bed, work tomorrow, 8 shows.
Yeah.
So conscientious. But that's, again, part of the humility, isn't it?
Yeah.
Talking of which, are you going out to LA for the Emmys?
I am. Crazy. And the thing I love is that, you know, myself and the glorious Juno Temple are nominated in the same category. And, you know, even though she has been a child star and always worked consistently, I don't know who was more shocked, me or her. I was certainly, definitely more pleased for her and for Jeremy Swift, who plays Higgins, because they are the most unassuming, lovely, joyous souls I've met in recent times. And Juno and I were each other's second phone call. I rang my parents and then I rang her and she was calling me. So one of us was engaged. And she went, will you be my date? And I went, obviously. And she was like, thanks.
Oh, it's so bad. But I mean, like, yes, literally, you cannot write it, can you? You know, a show comes out of the traps. It captures the heart of not just, you know, the audiences here in the UK where football's a thing. It transcends football, Ted Lasso. I mean, that's just that kind of
thing. Yeah, that's it. Really kind of just the backdrop, I think.
Yeah, it is. It gives a spine to the show from which everything else hangs. But it's global. I mean, the show has really touched people. And you're seeing that now in the way it's coming back to you with some of that industry recognition.
Yeah, but
crazy. It must feel like a fairy tale.
It does. And I'm actually, I wouldn't have thought this when I was younger. If somebody said, oh, you'll be in something that takes you to places you never thought you would reach when you're 47, I would have just gone, oh God, have I got to wait that long? But actually, I mean it when I say I'm glad it didn't come along any earlier, because I don't think I would have been able to receive it in any way, in front or behind the camera.
I know, I see you on the cover of Variety magazine, like the cover of Variety magazine. And I was like, shut up. It's Hannah on the cover of Variety. She's all over Hollywood. It's just nuts.
Honestly, I watched back my Critics' Choice acceptance speech once and I just thought, good God, you are undoubtedly the most ridiculous person that's ever graced the Hollywood setting.
Not at all. Not at all. It's just a wonderful thing, and long may it continue. So Lasso's back, obviously. I mean, Apple are not going to not continue with this.
No, we start shooting season 3 in January.
Thank goodness. And it's still shot here in the UK.
Yeah, man.
Amazing. Well, it's got to, I mean, and the cast, what I love as well is I think, you know, you tell me if this is down to Jason or not, but there's a lot of new actors coming through in that cast that I hadn't seen in lots of other things. So he's putting a lot of people that wouldn't have been seen or heard otherwise right in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. He's literally gone. I mean, I have to say that does come down to Theo Park, our UK casting director, and Kimberly Pope in the US. They have found people that are, and this should happen more often, because I don't know about you, but you see the same faces constantly, I think, on British television. And that was my frustration. I feel like I had to jump over to the other side of the pond in order to get recognized. And I don't think that's right, personally.
No.
And they've found people here that are just right for the job. And it doesn't matter whether they've had this amount of credits or, you know, what the price on their head is or whatever. They've just gone, that person's right because guess what? They're right for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I mean, Ellie, who plays Sassy, your best friend in it.
Yeah, I mean, like,
she's a great stand-up here. I really love Ellie Taylor. And then suddenly she pops up and says, like, yes! And she fits right in.
The part from the word go.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, really good to see.
And also he's lovely because he, you know, he serves the cast and serves the story at the same time. If you notice in season two, everyone has more to do.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Not a lot about him. And I'm waiting to find out what's happening with his divorce. Is he okay? I know he had a one-night stand with Sassy, but maybe he could go back there again. She seems quite game.
Sassy's definitely game. The thing that I love is that it seems to me that it's like our writer's room are an absolute bunch of Jedi Knights. They are just incredible writers. And they seem to get the ebb and flow. If you think about it, we've got like 30 minutes odd to tell a story, to further the story. And it feels like they just serve every character with light and shade brilliantly. It doesn't seem, you know, it doesn't just follow Ted or just follow Rebecca or just follow Roy or whatever. You suddenly get
Roy.
Characters bubbling up. Roy.
Roy's just genius. Roy's Roy Keane, right?
Well, Roy and Brett Goldstein, who's created him. I mean, for him to be in the writer's room and basically responsible for any British reference there is, really. I mean, he is just, I'm so glad. But there you go. Then again, Brett Goldstein, stand-up, known as a stand-up in this country and writer. And yet it's taken this for people to go, oh my God, he's a really good actor as well, isn't he?
So he writes on the show as well?
Yeah, he's one of the main writers.
My God, do you know, I did not know that. And now I just love him all
the
more.
He writes whole episodes.
I mean, the growling, the relationship with his niece is just brilliant.
And the thing that's so funny is, in real life, he is undoubtedly the smiliest, silliest sausage I've ever met. Yeah. Oh, he's delicious.
So how did he end up on the writing team for this? Now I'm all intrigued.
I think Bill Lawrence, our exec producer, who produced amongst other things, of course, the brilliant Scrubs. He invited him onto the writing, into the writer's room. And then they'd finished, I know I'm not speaking out of turn because I've heard Brett talk about it himself. They'd finished writing the whole of season one. And on the last day, he thought, I know that I can serve Roy well. There had been no word of him being in the cast. He sent them all an email with a link to him doing the scenes as Roy. And he went, here you go. This is my take on Roy Kent. If you think it's great, great. If you don't, we need never talk about this ever again.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
And they were all just like, that's Roy Kent. Because he doesn't talk like that either in real life. He doesn't talk all that. He's got a much more high pitch, well, not high pitch, not like helium high pitch, but he's got a completely different voice in real life.
But this all plays into the spirit of the show. And maybe I'm just like over fanning it here. But, you know, there's moments like Christmas Day with the Secret Santa in the changing rooms. The camaraderie is tangible. You can feel
it. It's totally real. Like recently, Jeremy Swift, who plays Higgins, had his birthday and we all went. All of us.
Aww.
So there's a whole football team moshing around with all, you know, with all Jeremy's well-to-do, lovely middle-class friends. And then there's all of us like, on the dance floor, me and all my footy boys. It's awful. I can think of worse jobs.
That's just joyous. Oh, may it long, you know, may it last long.
Oh, I
and
hope
may you
so.
All continue to soak up the sunshine of Ted Lasso. It's joyous. Really, best of luck at the Emmys. I am rooting for you, all of you. I hope you bring it home. I really do.
I'm just going to go there and have a lovely time. When you don't think you're going to win, you can just go and have a lovely time.
And you're all going, it's like a really big jolly at the end of a series.
Exactly. And we're all going to be there. And I'm just going to have to be careful that I'm not several sheets to the wind.
Yeah, just pace yourself.
Take snacks. Take snacks down your bra.
Yeah, carbs, not rats.
Yeah.
I really hope you've enjoyed revisiting a conversation with the woman of the hour, the brilliant Hannah Waddingham. And if you'd like more chat with wonderful thespians, can I point you in the direction of episodes with Charlie Brooks, Tamsin Outhwaite, Judy Graham, Tracy Ann Oberman, Denise Welsh, Alan Cumming, Luke Evans, and so many more. I'll be back on Friday with a brand new guest. Until then, thanks so much for your company.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.